Hi, I'm Steve Todd, and you're listening to Musicians FAQ, a radio program focused on learning more about the musicians that are entertaining you around Waterloo Region. We're featuring your favorite local singer, guitar player, or drummer, learning how they got started, influences, funny stories about past gigs, and upcoming performances. You'll also hear some great recordings of their work. In addition, we'll be learning about others in the music industry that are helping to maintain a vibrant music scene. This is Musicians FAQ. Hey, thanks a lot for listening to Musicians FAQ. It's Steve Todd, and this is part two of our interview with Dennis Scheer. The last episode was Dennis was talking about his song Radio Romeo and how he wrote it in about 10 minutes after his wife was upset that her favorite DJ at CKGL was leaving. He pitched it to a few studios and stuff, and he eventually had Madonna Tassi record it. I believe it was recorded in Cedar Tree in Kitchener, and it ended up down in Nashville. So why don't we listen to the song, and then Dennis is going to tell you what happened with the tune. All right, here we go. Here's Madonna Tassi singing Radio Romeo.
Radio.
Well, that is
We were sitting at home here one day and having breakfast, and the radio announcer came on, Derek Sanderson, who used to be with the Kitchener Country Station.
Okay. Was it not CKGL, was it?
CKGL.
Okay.
And he was with them, and he was my wife's absolute favorite morning guy.
Yep, okay.
And so he's announcing that he's leaving CKGL. And I look over at my wife, she's kind of pouting and kind of sad. And I says, what is he, your Radio Romeo?
Yeah.
Within 10 minutes.
Yep, he had a song.
I had a song called Radio Romeo. So I wrote this tune, and I just sat there and I just started scratching. And so I didn't have it quite finished, and I knew there was something missing in the song. So I went down to Cedar Tree and I talked to Rick. And I ran the song by him, and he said, yeah. And so I invited him in to write into it with me, and we co-wrote it. And here's where the unfortunate part of it all is. We brought in Madonna Tassi to demo the song, because I had written this. After I wrote it, I said, who could do this?
Yep.
And I said, this is for Janie Fricke. This song has to be for Janie Fricke. And at the time, Janie Fricke was the biggest Nashville artist in the world.
Yep.
And she was at the top of her game.
Okay.
And so Rick knew Gilles Godard, who was producing her. Rick called Gilles Godard and talked to him, and then I talked to Gilles, and he said, send the song down. Well, I sent the song down, and within a week, I got a call back from Nashville, and congratulations.
Wow.
We're going to cut the tune. Janie Loves the Song is going to be the title of the album. It's going to go worldwide distribution. And for a guy like me who's never had much happen, you know, I'm just going, wow. So I phoned, and so he just said, just shave it down. We want you to take 25 seconds off the song.
So Dennis tried to edit the song, but it was unfortunately not able to remove 25 seconds off his song Radio Romeo. So here's the rest of the story of his discussion with Gilles and what happened with the song.
So I called Gilles Godard back and I told him, and he said, okay, thank you, fine. And I never heard any more. And that was the last I ever heard of it.
Okay.
I didn't call back down, and I always wondered
what
had happened with that tune. Well, shortly after that, I got a call from Madonna Tassi, who had done the original demo. And she called me and she asked me if I had any other songs that might be for her, because she was going to go into Darren Walter's studio.
Okay, yeah.
And do a demo to shop. And so I got together with her and I wrote some songs, and she picked four of my songs. Well, she, naturally, Radio Romeo, she took that right away. And then I wrote three more songs for her. So we got them demoed. And she put a package together, and then her husband, Peter, says to me, I want you to take her down to Nashville and shop the album. And so I made a bunch of contacts in Nashville, talked to some record labels and whatever, and we went down and we were shopping her album, and to make a long story short, we came back with no results with her. But while we were down there, I had met with Gilles Godard and presenting everything to him as well. And I asked him what happened to Radio Romeo with Janie Fricke.
Yeah.
He said, it might have been the greatest song in the world up there.
Yeah.
And we loved it. And it would have been a great song. He says, but you know how many great songs are in Nashville? If you don't want to do the work.
Yeah.
He said it just went in the bucket.
That's too bad.
And yeah, so we lost out on that. But like I said before, these are the hardships that you go through when you're just a writer.
Yeah.
When you're dependent.
Yeah.
Every little thing that happens affects you.
Plus you need the artist to first pick up the song and then be successful with the song. So it's almost a double. So at this point, why don't we hear a couple of the Madonna Tassi songs that Dennis wrote on her album, Man of My Dreams. We already heard her version of Radio Romeo. Let's hear Who's That Girl in the Picture? We talked about that in the first half of this episode. And also Turn Up the Radio. So let's listen to those two tunes, and then we'll return with the rest of the interview with Dennis.
Started writing with different artists and doing songs with different artists, and not much really developed. And yep. You know, it was a good experience though. But then I got a call. First of all, Rick Hutt called me one day, and this was pretty interesting as well. He called me and he said, "Dennis, you do a lot of fishing." And I said, "Yeah, I do a lot of fishing." He says, "Well, we're doing a fishing album."
Okay.
"A crazy, funny fishing album we want to do yep. for the Izumi Fishing Show." And I said, "Okay." So I went down to see him. "What do you want? What do you need?" And he told me what their idea was, and I said, well, I got the perfect guy to write these songs with me for you. And so I got a hold of Norm Shaver, who did this album, and I said to him, we gotta write a bunch of crazy fishing songs. Well, between him and I think we wrote about 140 fishing songs.
Yeah, we just, are you working still? Like at
your, I'm working. I'm working. We're like, and so
and we got young kids too, right? Like you're.
Yeah, and so we would sit up at night till 4 a.m, and we'd have a bottle of wine and a 40-ouncer sitting crazy. There, and
we were
just getting stupid, thinking about crazy fishing stuff.
It'd be fun though,
and it was a lot of fun. And so we wrote a whole whack of fishing tunes. Well, they picked out 14 that they thought were pretty hilarious. And so we went in the studio and we started recording them. And then they had a meeting with the Azumis and I guess with Capitol Records and everything. And I went down to that meeting, but I didn't sit in on the meeting. And when they came out of it, I knew something wasn't good.
Oh, let's do that.
Yeah, so here we go again.
Yep.
You know, this could have been a big record with
the Azumis. Fish that got away.
Yeah, and so for whatever reason, it didn't develop and it didn't happen. And that's so
I've heard stories too from other people though that they would write a song and then the company would sort of steal it and maybe change it and put a different face to it. And so
that can happen, but it. You know, you got to really be careful with your works. You got to have it all protected.
Yeah,
You got to have everything protected.
Yeah, and you're a member of SoCan.
Member of SoCan, definitely. Good. You know, and all that stuff and all your songs. It's pretty hard these days. Yeah. At one time, people used to do that a fair bit.
For sure. I'm just looking at your list of songs so I can see Jason Berry, which I know later on you're going to talk about his wife, Melissa. But it looks like he's recorded Going Fishing. So is that one of the tunes?
That's one of the tunes. Wow.
So let's hear two songs off of the Get the Net album. And Dennis is going to talk a little bit more about this after these two tunes. So first we're going to hear Going Fishing. And it's with Jason Berry. A lot of people know him as Woody in the KW area. And we're going to hear a little bit more about his wife, Melissa, later on in the program. And we're also going to hear Tell Me Grandpa, also sung by Jason Berry. All right, here we go.
My tackle's organized, there's nothing left for me to do. I'm all set to go, let's get on with the show. Well, I'm ready for this trip for two. We'll hit our favorite spot and if the day is hot, we can stay just a little bit longer. Oh, I can't wait to get on our way, 'cause this fever's getting stronger. Going fishing, going fishing. Baby, smiling my way, gonna have a great day, no competition. Going fishing, going fishing. We'll be gone, but not for too long. Last night everything's alright, we made it before the sun came up. So quiet and clear I can almost hear the coffee brewing in my cup. You know I love to smell the morning air as the sun breaks over the water. There's nowhere else I'd rather be than fishing with my son and daughter. We're going fishing. Baby, smiling my way, gonna have a great day, no competition. We're going fishing. We're going fishing. We'll be gone, but not for too long. We're going fishing. competition. Baby, smiling my way, gonna have a great day. No competition. We're going fishing. We're going fishing. We'll be gone, but not for too long. We're going fishing. We'll be gone, but not for too long. You tell me, Grandpa, we've been here so many times. What really makes the difference between your line and mine? I know that you've been fishing all your whole life through. So won't you tell me, Grandpa, why I catch more than you? I know that you're an expert, I've been told so many times. Daddy says when you were a boy, you caught 'em all the time. He said your grandpa taught you exactly what to do. So won't you tell me, Grandpa, why I catch more than you?
And the old man smiled.
Well, we were sitting down by the riverside, my grandpa and me, talking about fishing and just shooting the breeze. Now, he always had an answer for everything, you see. So I just had to ask him why he never caught more fish than me. He turned and looked at me with that silly little grin, and I thought I knew what he would say before he would begin. But then he surprised me. He said, "Son, as time goes by, you sure will learn a lot. 'Cause in this world, some have to teach, and some of us be taught. So when it comes to fishing, I guess I've learned all I can before I ever grew to be a man. See, my grandpa took me fishing, taught me how to bait a hook. He made me tie my line no matter how long it took. He'd watch me catch a fish time after time, and he'd just sit there and dangle his old line. You see, catching fish to him wasn't his priority. It just made him happy knowing what he was doing for me. He said, one day you'll have a grandson and bring him this gift of joy. Just to catch a fish is in the heart of every boy." Now I understand what fishing's all about. Really makes no difference if it's a sunfish or a trout. 'Cause fishing's more than catching, it's being with your best friend. And as Grandpa brought his line in, I noticed had no hook on the end.
And the old man smiled.
It's really funny how I met Jason. We were sitting around one day, and I had just had a meeting with Beverly Mahood, and she was talking to me about wanting to do some recording again, and I said okay, and I went down and had a little chat with Rick Hutt, and we brought Bev into the studio, and we were doing a bunch of demos with her, and you know, and then they started talking about getting Bev on the road and everything, and I said, well, we got to find a guitar player for Bev, and that's how the Jason Berry thing started. Rick says to me, well, come on down Friday night and let's go out, we'll bar hop and we'll see what's around.
Yeah.
It happened, we walked into the Station Hotel this
particular night. Okay, I remember that place.
And we walked in there and there's a band playing and they were on the road and they were playing and I'm sitting with Rick and I'm watching this guitar player and I said, Rick, I said, this guy's good. Never seen him before.
Yep.
Naturally, they were from New Brunswick. And they were on the road. And
I wonder if that was Ron Griffin, because...
Cripple Creek?
Ron brought him back.
Yeah.
Because my friend Rob Allen was in that band. He was the bass player.
Oh, yeah.
And they had a bus and they traveled out east. And then I think when they came back, they had an extra person, which was
Jason.
I'm pretty sure that's the story of how Jason ended up in Kitchener.
Yeah, exactly. Because it was Cripple Creek and it was Ron.
Yeah.
We got talking to Jason for a little bit, and then we went back to the studio, and about 2 weeks later, I said, Rick, did you ever call Jason back?
Yeah.
And he said, I'll get on to that. And I said, no, we got to do it now. Those guys are going to take off.
Yeah.
And so I phoned Jason up, and I said, hey, Jason. And I told him who I was, where I met him. And so we got together, and I brought him into the studio.
Yep.
That was Jason's life change
for sure. Yeah.
That was a change of life for a lot of people.
Oh, for sure.
Because we got Jason in the studio and things just started to escalate with Jason from there.
Yeah.
And so that's how he got on. At that very time, we were doing this Crazy Fishing record. Well, what happened is I got injured at work and compensation sent me back to retrain and I had to go to Conestoga College for a while. While I was there, we spent a lot of time working on the album and everything.
Okay, yep.
And finally, I found somebody who wanted to invest in the album.
Okay, yep.
So we got the album back up and going again.
And did you keep those 14 original tunes that were going to be?
Kept them. Actually, I got it right here for you. So we got everybody back into the studio and Jason and I had started writing a couple tunes together once I got to know him a little bit. Sat down and collaborated on Going Fishing.
That's great. This is 1999, so we've jumped up a few years here. Okay.
So we got together and collaborated on... He came up with the idea for this, and we got together and we wrote the song. And it became the title song for... we got a hold of Daryl Cronzy from the Going Fishing show.
Yeah, I see his name right here.
Yeah.
Host of Going Fishing. Okay.
Yeah, so we got a hold of Daryl Cronzy from the Going Fishing show to get this thing started back up again.
Okay.
And he agreed to get on board with this. And so he took the title song, Going Fishing, and he used it on his TV show for over 10 years.
Wow, okay.
And that, which was a good thing.
Oh, for sure. Well, and it kind of justifies what happened with the first...
Yeah,
the first round that it's almost like baseball. You have to take a couple swings sometimes to
and then through this whole process, while we were doing the fishing record, there was a young girl working in Rick's studio by the name of Tia McGrath, and I got to know her a little bit and started talking, and she said, "Can I write a song for the fishing album?"
Yeah,
I said, "Sure, if you want to." She says, "Well, why don't you sit down with me and let's write one?" She says, as a matter of fact, she lived in Port Dover. She says, why don't you come up to Port Dover and we'll walk around and we'll get some ideas, all the commercial boats, everything up there. And I said, okay, yeah. So we went up and we wrote the fisherman song that's on there.
Yep.
It was a tribute to the commercial fisherman actually out of Port Dover, which went on the radio for a while and got a little bit of airplay and whatever.
Sure. Good.
And so I got to meet Tia McGrath.
Okay.
Who eventually I got involved with songwriting, and this is the way it all escalates. And so when I met her, she was doing an album with Rick in the studio, but she wanted to do something different than what she was doing, and she asked me if I would work on writing an album with her as well. I said, sure, let's start writing. And so we started writing, and then we met Gary O'Connor, who was known as Gary O back in the 80s, and he was a world-class writer. He wrote for Pat Benatar and people like that. And, and plus he was known as Gary O back then, he was a rock artist.
Yeah.
I met him through Cedar Tree as well, and we all hooked up and we started writing her album, Jules Cafe.
All right, let's take a little break here and we'll listen to Tia McGrath singing Looking for Love. It's on her Jules Cafe album. Same album, Tia McGrath, Jules Cafe album. We're going to actually hear the title track, Jules Cafe. So let's listen to that. This is one of Dennis's songs, and then we'll return to the interview. All right.
There's a light that shines on the edge of time, and you come to a neon sign. They stop the clock, oh, they love to talk. They shine when the lights go down. Raise the glass to the lost and the found. As a Dixieland band plays another song to help us dance the night away. And life crowd in this neon cabaret. When you're safe from tomorrow, Cafe, a Jules Cafe, caught in black and white on a victory night, the home team of 73, and the jukebox plays back the glory days, and it's still you. Bojangle man claps his hands to help us dance the night away, and life goes down easy at Jules Cafe. The love and the music and working the crowd in this neon. From tomorrow, and you'll find the time that slipped away at Jules Cafe. At Jules Cafe. Guitar man plays another song to help us dance the night away, and life goes down easy at Jules Cafe. I've been loving the music and working the crowd in this neon cabaret where life goes down easy at Jules Cafe. At Jules Cafe, where life goes down easy.
One of these stories where I told you when you're dependent on other people, and unfortunately that album turned out to be a really good album, and it didn't happen neither.
Yeah, for whether it's marketing or...
Well, to make a long story short, she parted ways with her music marketing guy. And unfortunately, when she did that, I had a meeting with him in Toronto over Fishing Record. I went up to see him, and we were very close to having this album go out. And I asked him what happened to the album. He said, well, we parted ways. She wanted to part ways. And yep. He showed me the contracts. And the album was signed to Nashville BMG and to Nashville.
Oh, really?
Or to BMG.
Yep.
In Nashville and to BMG Canada. And it didn't happen.
Wow.
And, you know, so.
And, yeah, for sure.
You know, but it was a project that I had worked on with them for almost a year.
Well, okay.
You know, and it fell through.
Yeah.
And like I say, these things happen.
All right, so two more songs off the Jules Cafe album by Tia McGrath. We're going to hear Baby, I Want You, and also I'll Let the Wind Dry My Eyes. So let's hear those two tunes, then we'll return with our interview. All right.
You walked in right out of the blue. Lately my dreams are all coming true. I can't explain what I'm going through. Never loved like this before. Stole my heart, and for now and evermore, baby, I want you, baby, I need you, whoa, I love you. my heart. Every time I hear you say, baby, I want you. Baby, I need you. Oh, I love you. Thank you.
I'm not going strong at it anymore. You know, I backed off quite a bit. I got into the fiddle thing.
Oh, yeah, well, you're missing. Well, and that goes into Melissa now.
So. Which goes into Melissa. It's hilarious because I always wanted to learn how to play violin.
Yep.
And as a matter of fact, when I was in grade three or four, they had a violin program at the school, and I was in that, you know. But once that was over, it was over because my parents wouldn't give me any lessons.
That's for sure.
And so I played for a couple of years, took lessons, but that was back when I was 9, 10 years old.
Yeah, I quit when I was 12 because I thought it was a nerd thing to play, and then in my 20s I started liking country, and
I always liked violin, and I always wanted to learn how to play it. I got a temporary job, well, turned into a full-time job at St. Joe's Hospital at one point, and while I was there, this guy comes up to me and he says, "Hey, I'm getting rid of this old violin. It was in my mother's house, and she doesn't want it. Give me $25 and you can have it." Down the road, I sold it for $650.
Oh, you're kidding. Sorry.
But, so I had this old violin kicking around for, oh gosh, 20 years, sitting in the closet, and I just kept staring at it saying, "I got to learn how to play this one day." Well, it was really funny because I went over to Jason's one day, and he says, "I want you to meet my fiance." And so he introduced me to Melissa. I found out she was a fiddler, and that she taught. Once I retired, I decided I'm going to learn how to play this thing.
Yeah.
And so I gave Melissa a call. So she said, "Well, come on in, let's." And I started taking lessons from her. Yeah, and this time I was determined I was going to learn it.
Yeah. Melissa's in New Brunswick.
She moved there. She moved there last year a year and a half ago.
Yeah. And you're just doing this with Skype, so you have Skype lessons.
Yeah. Well, I took lessons with her here. But it was about, I would say I've been taking lessons for 10 or 11 years from right now. And when it started out, my wife was still working. And I, naturally, I'm at home retired. So I spent the first 4 years, 8 hours a day practicing.
Oh, that's crazy.
Every day.
Yeah.
Every day for 8 hours a day.
Melissa's best student.
I don't know if I was her best. I'm still not her best, I don't think.
Well, I'm sure.
She had some pretty amazing students. Yeah. But very successful at it. I never dreamed I would get as far as I got on it.
Yeah.
I know that I'll never ever master or get where I'd like to be on it because there's just not enough time.
Yeah.
As you know.
Well, yeah, but you're able to play in front of people and go to the homes and do what you
Well, that, do, so. That's thanks to her too because she told me if I'm going to take violin lessons from her, I'm going to learn the proper way to play it and whatever. In 2014, she says to me, she says, "You're playing good enough," because now her kids were full-time in school and she had time through the day and now she wanted to go out and start playing.
Yeah.
Naturally, I played guitar, so she says, "Let's go out and start doing the long-term care and senior citizen circuit." And I said, "You want to go out and play with me? You want me to play violin?" She says, "Yeah, you're good enough. You can play." She says, "I'll play keyboard when you're fiddling, and you play guitar when I'm fiddling." So we started.
Yeah.
In 20, well, that was
yeah, that's first, a great
that's our first gig right there.
Yeah.
And at the Lang Center in Cambridge, so we started, and that turned out okay. And from there, we just kept playing.
That's great.
I said, "If you're that serious about it," I said, "I'll start getting a whole lot of bookings." Well, we started playing 4 days a week.
All right, luckily, Dennis had one recording with Melissa. It's a fiddle classic, Red Wing, and we're going to hear that right now. Thank you.
okay, this is the end of my playing, because now, let's face it, she covered for me quite a bit, you know, and, you know, and she, you know, she was the backbone as far as it all went, because she could hold the show, and naturally I could play a lot of tunes, but I still didn't have that experience. And so by the time we got done playing together, she says, you can carry this on, she said. And I said, I don't know. But then she introduced me to Gary.
Yeah, Gary Moser.
Gary Moser.
Yep.
And so we, Gary and I talked. She says, you got to play with Gary. You got to keep doing this. And so Gary and I talked, and we had a couple practices together, and he agreed, yeah, let's do this. So yep. Gary and I are still...
That's great. Yeah, I've known Gary for, I don't know how many, at least 25 years.
Yeah, sure. Amazing guy. Really, just amazing guy. Good musician, great musician. So, yeah, we go out. He brings his accordion out and his keyboard, and I play guitar and... fiddle, and
I'm
carrying the fiddle stuff now.
Good stuff.
And yeah, it turned out, and it's working out really well.
Yep.
So that's just about where I am today.
Okay.
You know, with music. Thing I wrote was a wedding song for my son and daughter-in-law.
Oh, okay.
That's, since then I haven't written a song, but
well, you switch gears now. You're performing though, so you've gone from performing as a teenager.
I gave
to
up
writing, and then now performing again.
So. Yeah. Well, I went through the whole writing thing, and you know, after a while, you know, you just look at where it's been, where it's gone to, where it's going, and the odds, you know, the odds aren't that great.
Yeah,
and anybody that's in the game knows what the chances are of landing a song, and that's the way it is in the music industry. But
all right, so here's Dennis's song called "We Laugh." It's the last song he wrote. He wrote it for his son and daughter-in-law's wedding, and we have Jason Berry playing all the instruments except for the violin, which was played by his wife Melissa, and Jason's also singing on the recording.
To dance, share midnight rendezvous and candlelight romance, and we laugh and we play, run through the rain, live life for the moment, then we live it again, and we laugh. Dreams we dream we'll always share together. The love we have, we vow, will last forever. When we kiss, when our lips touch, what a feeling, what a rush. Forever, baby, let's remember when we laugh. Cry, hold each other tight, chase away the tears, dry each other's eyes, and we laugh. And the dreams we dream we'll always share together. The love we have, we vow, will last forever. What a feeling, what a rush. Forever, baby, let's remember when we laugh.
But I had pretty good success songwriting. I held...
Well, just by the name, the listeners can't see it, but you have a pretty long sheet of paper people that have recorded your songs. So
The name of the game is you got to make some money at some time off of this, because it's an expensive game.
Yeah.
And I managed to pay off a mortgage. I managed to buy a few vehicles. I didn't lose at the game, but, I didn't get that number one hit that everybody's trying to get. I came close. Yeah.
One of your first songs, though, you were top 10 independent right across Canada, so that's you had success right from the start.
Yeah, that was success, and the fishing record naturally was that was a big thing for us. Yeah. That's where I am today. And
well, thanks a lot for letting me interview you. I didn't know hardly anything about you at all, so it's pretty amazing. I downplayed your success a bit, but you've obviously had a lot of big names record your music, so.
Yeah, I heard a lot about you once they told me you were coming in on the band, because I said, hey, we got to get one more person in on this band, and I said, we need a singer, we need a little bit more, and Gary says, I know just the guy.
Okay, well, that's flattering for me, thank you. Yeah.
So I heard a lot about you long before I met you.
Well, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
I probably wrote your story.
Okay. Well, anyway, thanks a lot for letting me interview you. And
you're welcome.
All right.
And thanks for having me.
Yep. Okay.
Hi, friends. Kevy Canuck here from Kitchener, Ontario, and you're listening to 102.7 CKMS Radio Waterloo.ca.